Podium Publishing presents Hunted, Book 3 of the Triss Moon Saga, written by Brian K. Fuller, read by Simon Vance. Chapter 49, Thunder and Rain.
"We will ride for as long as we can," Maywin announced to the somber party gathered at the head of the bridge over Mora Lake. "We ride quickly, so keep together."
Grumbling was the only reply as her audience cinched saddles and stuffed what few supplies they had left into saddlebags. Despite their casualties, they came up one horse shy, and the Shalane offered to ride double with Fenner. Dayson protested, complaining that her horse would need speed if they fell into a fight, but the Shalane silenced him with an order, and he helped her sit in front of the new Lady of Blackshire.
"Finally, someone obeys one of my commands," the Shalane thought bitterly.
Fenner's pale, empty face darkly complimented Jeff's shamed, sobered countenance. Jeff was so out of character he seemed a different person altogether, as he stowed his writing materials in his cloak and climbed up on a bay horse that reflected his lowering mood.
"We will almost surely need to leave the horses behind at some point," Maywin continued, "and slaughter them for food. If the Uyumak are against us in numbers, then we will need to tread paths too difficult for four legs. If I should fall, you must head toward the rising sun. At all costs, avoid getting trapped against the Shard Edge."
She turned toward Shatan and Padre Athan, who stood side by side, improvising a way to tie the pontiff's staff onto Shatan's horse.
"I would ask both of you to reconsider leaving Jen behind. He knows wilderness lore and is the best fighter we have."
"Absolutely not," Padre Athan refused sternly. "How can you even request such a thing, considering what he did last night?"
"How could I not," Maywin returned evenly, "considering what awaits us for the next month and a half? You will rue this decision."
She turned her horse and spurred it forward across the bridge. The Shalane looked at her mother, who returned a meaningful glance. She would have Jen freed, whatever the cost. Her mother loved him better than anyone, and Padre Athan and Shatan would find out what the former First Mother of Rugoth was capable of. The Shalane kicked her legs and her black stallion Rora cantered forward. The morning dawned chill with a hint of autumn in it. The clear sky above them awaited a mass of roiling grey clouds to the east that churned toward them at an alarming rate. She didn't need anyone to tell her that it wasn't natural. While she was not Maywin or Jen when it came to the wild and the weather, the storm felt wrong even at a distance. And as the bridge over Lake Mora faced east and west, their departure from the Holy City took them straight toward the oncoming disturbance. The Uyumak attack and the casualties of the wedding night had reduced the once mighty caravan to 24 souls. 3 Dark Guard, their apprentices, Jaren, Dayson, Cadean, and 5 of Shatan's personal guard were all that remained of the soldiers. The Shalane rejoiced that the majority were Rugothian. If for no other reason, Shatan would hold his tongue and his hand while surrounded by those who by law were his subjects, but by heart were hers. Jaren, she knew, would kill Shatan without a second thought if he so much as treated her with disrespect, and she didn't doubt that others in the party would do the same. It was Jen's legacy. They reached the end of the bridge and rode for the tall gate cut into one of the high hills that surrounded the lake. The wind howled through the gap, plastering her veil to her face. Maywin rode on, glancing worriedly at the sky. Distant booms rumbled ominously in the wind, and after they had ridden only a mile, lightning flicked across the edges of the mass of clouds now roiling above them. Maywin held up and signalled for everyone to gather around her.
"We must find shelter," she screamed in the mounting wind. "There are several buildings along the path ahead of us. Keep a tight rein on your horses."
Even as she finished, lightning struck a tree nearby, thunder booming so loudly that the Shalane let her reins drop to cover her head. Her horse reared with fear, and she and Fenner tumbled out of the saddle and onto the hard stones of the road in a heap. The Shalane landed awkwardly on her right side, pain from her wrist lancing up her arm. She extricated herself from Fenner and stood with Dayson's help, Jeff nearby to lend his wife his hand. Tears stung the Shalane's eyes as she supported her hurt wrist with her good hand. Her horse sprinted back toward the gap along with 3 other horses, Dayson's and Jeff's among them. Her mother swore, handing her reins to Cadean as she dismounted to aid her ailing daughter. The rain descended in pelting sheets.
Come, run or ride, Maywin commanded. Jaren lifted the injured Shalane onto his horse, Mirel sitting behind to help steady her daughter, and a fearful Jeff hoisted Fenner onto Mirel's horse. By the time they found a small circular building shaped and constructed in the same fashion as those in Elder Lurimora, the rain had thoroughly soaked everyone. The soldiers tied the horses to tree branches as everyone else hurried inside. Lightning cracked and thunder rolled all about them, the ferocious downpour drumming up a deafening roar on the ceiling of the building. As with the hall in Elder Lurimora, a small circular skylight was cut into the top of the dome. In the centre of the room was a fire pit surrounded by an elevated bench carved out of the floor, a place for gathering and talking. A spectacular painting of the city of Elder Lurimora stretched around the walls and was so lifelike that it almost seemed to be a window looking on the city. The circular border of the fire pit was carved to resemble flames shooting up from the ground, and carved animals and vines filigreed the benches.
"Her ladyship is hurt," Dacen announced loudly, helping the Shalane onto the bench. "Can you do something for her, Padre? Maywin?"
"My talents do not lie with healing, I am afraid," Padre Aethon apologized. Maywin jogged over, face worried. Pushing the wet hair out of her face, she knelt before the Shalane and pulled up the young woman's sleeve. As Maywin prodded her forearm, the Shalane yelped in pain.
"It is not a bad break," Maywin reported, "but it will hurt you a great deal when you move. I will splint it and prepare a sling. I have some herbs I can stew for the pain. Do you want them?"
The Shalane nodded. Her arm throbbed and the pain scarcely let her think of anything else.
"I have enough for a few days," Maywin continued, "which should get you through the worst of it."
She turned to the assembly of onlookers.
"Don't just stand there. Find some wood for a fire before it is all too wet to burn, and find the horses that ran off."
The dark guard dashed out of the building and into the rain. Maywin left and returned quickly with two straight sticks, and as Jaren oversaw the fire, the half-elf gently splinted the brake.
"How can Jen ignore such pain?"
the Shalane thought in her anguish, remembering him at the betrothal standing with an arm shattered far worse than hers, and not seeming the least bit strained. Every time Maywin put any pressure on her arm at all, she felt like screaming. Dacen retrieved two bedrolls and created a comfortable bed on the floor near the back of the structure. Mirel led her to it and sat beside her, Fenner joining them. Before long, an acrid odour filled the room, and in dismay, the Shalane realized the bitter smell was a prelude to what Maywin would force her to drink.
"A poor piece of luck, Highness," Dacen sympathized. "This is not cards, Dacen. Luck had nothing to do with it,"
the Shalane disagreed.
"I let go of the reins and lost control of the animal. The thunder unnerved me. It was so close. I need more control."
"Highness," Dacen said tenderly, "it is hardly your fault. The horse should have—"
"Enough, Dacen," the Shalane interrupted. "Being the Shalane does not mean I am exempt from errors in judgment. I will pay for this and learn the lesson. Do not trouble yourself about it."
Dacen opened his mouth to protest, but Mirel stared him down and he snapped it shut. The stewing required over an hour. Shatan inquired after her briefly, and Jaren brought her some dried meat and water. The rain and thunder continued unabated, the storm stalling in place above them. The only comfort they had was that the enemy could not reach them. Maywin guessed they could travel for at least a day under Elder Lurimora's protection against Mikik's creatures. By the time Maywin arrived with her draft, weariness had sapped the Shalane of her vitality. She had scarcely slept the night before, and the pain in her arm throbbed incessantly. The potion tasted as bitter as it smelled, but after several minutes the pain faded, dwindling to a shadow of its former strength. Maywin emptied one of her water skins and poured the rest of the brew inside it.
"Take a little when the pain comes on," she instructed, laying it beside the Shalane. "Drink sparingly. It will make you drowsy. I'll let you have a generous portion to start to help you rest."
The Shalane nodded her understanding and laid her head in her mother's lap.
"There is one other thing," Maywin said,
glancing to ensure that Shatan was nowhere nearby. Once convinced, she reached into a pouch at her side and removed three necklaces, each with a pyramid-shaped stone.
"Before I left him, Jen gave them to me and told me to have you wear them."
"What are they?" the Shalane asked, taking them with her good hand.
"What do they do?" "I do not fully know," Maywin whispered. "He only mentioned that he wore them during his training and that they would help you. He also said to keep them secret, especially from the Ogmerians."
Mirel helped the Shalane sit up and put them on quickly, and they clinked as they knocked against the Jarl stone that had already hung about her neck. She wondered what they could be, but knowing that Jen had thought of her at the last brought a small contentment to her, and she found herself missing him again. The steady roar of the rain and the soporific in the medicine eventually lured her to sleep. She immediately fell into a dream, finding herself standing in a large cathedral. The chapel was beautiful, rivaling the great hall of her home. Expertly crafted white marble columns, darkly stained benches and high windows greeted her, and the statues lining the walls peered unendingly over the empty pews as if to inspire obedience and reverence in any that sat beneath their gaze. The Shalane walked forward tentatively, gasping at the magnificent stained glass window embedded in the ceiling, a picture of Eldaloth colouring everything around the altar. Turning her gaze back to the front, she noticed three doors to the rear of the choir loft, one in the centre and two to either side. A quick glance to the rear of the building showed her nothing but a blank wall where the front door should have been. Her raspy footsteps echoed through the empty building, and she wondered where it could be or if it was real at all. It was certainly nowhere near Elder Lurie Mora, since sunshine shone through the windows from a cloudless sky. "Hello?" the Shalane called out, voice echoing through the vast spaces. Although she couldn't say why, someone, she knew, was supposed to greet her here. But no one came, or answered her calls. "Something this finely constructed must be in a city of some size, or perhaps in Muir Eldaloth," she thought. Unfortunately, the windows were much too high to look out of, and after wandering around alone for what felt like an hour, the grand cathedral felt like a prison. As far as she could tell, the sun had not budged, the light slanting through the windows at the same angles it had when she first found herself inside the structure. The passing of time, which seemed instantaneous and inconsistent in most of her dreams, crawled along too authentically within the confines of the cathedral. She wondered if the stones Jen had given her were connected with what she was experiencing. But what does this church have to do with Jen? At last, she resolved to climb the steps to the choir loft and inspect the doors. They were constructed of the same dark, tightly grained wood of the benches. Within carved ovals on the door faces, an artisan had carefully chiselled likenesses. On two doors were the faces of men, and on the rightmost door, an elf. Each of the figures was different, and she thought the runes inscribed about the apex of the oval probably told their names, though she didn't recognize the runes and couldn't read them. She decided to try the leftmost door, the oval depicting a man with short hair and a longbow. Of the three, he had the kindest aspect, though why it should matter she couldn't guess. The door opened silently, and she only opened it a crack before peering cautiously inside. Her eyes widened at what she saw. A marble bier bore the body of the man whose face was carved into the door. He wore a black uniform, very like what the Dark Guard wore, his sword and bow embraced within his arms. Candles affixed to the floor in mounds of wax encircled the bier, but their flames were motionless, frozen in time. The room itself was small, well-lit, and unadorned, though a placard was affixed to the bier in the language she could not read. The Shalane thought he must have been part of the fighting order of the church, but something about the profile of his pale grey face seemed familiar somehow, and she entered to get a better look at him. The candlelight on the floor cast his face into shadow, so she stooped down, careful of her dress, and pried one of the candles out of the wax. As soon as she grasped it, it sputtered to life, flickering and dancing in her hand. Craning forward, she held the candle out over the corpse's face to get a better look. There was a resemblance to someone she knew in his mien that she couldn't place, but as she tried to sort out who, hot wax dripped and burned her hand and she let go of the candle. It fell onto the man's chest and sputtered out. Delicately, she reached down to remove it, and as she touched his chest, his eyes snapped open. She screamed, startling backward and falling to the floor. She woke. "Are you well?" Maywin asked, coming to her side as her mother forced her to lay back down. "Just a dream," she explained. "I am sorry." Then she saw it. The man on the bier reminded her of Maywin, though she certainly possessed a fiercer aspect. The two shared the same deep, knowing eyes. "The potion often leads to dreaming. They are usually not unpleasant, however." The Shalane closed her eyes and tried to slow her pounding heart.
It was not unpleasant. Merely surprising. Do not be troubled.
She tried to relax and return to her slumber, but nervousness kept it at bay despite the dullness of the day. Time passed slowly with a great deal of talk in low voices. Padre Ethan inquired after her welfare before turning to Maywin, who sat against a wall nearby, fletching. Ethan crouched down before the ranger, and she regarded him coldly.
"I was wondering," Ethan said, "what do you think the Uyumark's strategy to find us will be, if indeed they are arrayed against us as we fear?"
Maywin sheathed her knife and wiped the wood shavings from her legs.
"I think it is certain they are there and waiting for us, though in what numbers I cannot say. This rain, however, is quite deliberate. Soft, wet ground slows our movement, especially in ascent. The horses will leave such plain tracks that even a child could follow them for miles without difficulty. Even walking after today's deluge would do little to help us pass unnoticed. Most distressing, however, is that the storm is almost assuredly conjured through magic, which means they have a powerful mage. We have you and Shirtan, but if we face Joran, which is certainly possible, then I doubt the two of you can match her. Their strategy will be simple. Its effectiveness and our chance of overcoming it hinge solely upon their numbers and our ability to be stealthy. They know we must leave Eldaluri Mora and head north, but from where they do not know. They will patrol an east-west line, searching for sign of us. Once they find it, they will come, and quickly. If their numbers are few, we may get enough of an advance to help us get to places where tracking will be more difficult for them. If they can thickly patrol that east-west line, then our chances slim considerably. The rain's only virtue for us is that after the ground absorbs the water, we will be able to travel more quietly, provided that whoever is causing the storm cannot keep it up indefinitely. We will leave a clear mark wherever we go, however. So what is your plan? The Padre asked, mouth curled down in worry beneath his hooked nose.
Shirtan wandered up behind, arms crossed.
If they are smart, Maywin said, they will expect us to travel the shortest route, given the state of our supplies. The shortest route is northwest. I plan to do the opposite. Before we leave the protection of Eldaluri Mora, we will strike east. We'll have to ford the river, but if we can get across, we will ride hard due north into the lower foothills. While we will be more visible, the easy terrain will allow us to put the speed of the horses to good use and get some distance on our pursuers. Before the shattering, deer swarmed those hills, which, if still true, would go a long way toward solving our food problems. There is also plenty of water in that direction.
How much longer will it add to our trip?
Shirtan asked, expression betraying his fear of the answer. At least 2 weeks, but with this route we should be able to keep the horses for most of the journey. It does take us close to Dark Falls Bridge again, though I doubt they left any force there.
Have the Uyumark any weaknesses we might exploit? Ethan inquired hopefully.
Few, Maywin replied, twirling an arrow in her hand. In most respects, the Uyumark are our superiors. The hunters are faster than us and have a superior sense of smell. The warriors are stronger, the bashers tougher, the archers more accurate. All of them have scales that change color so they can hide more easily, and they see better in the dark than humans do.
A discouraging list, Ethan frowned. Where are they weak, if you would answer my original question?
Maywin stood. I was getting to that. They do not have language and must communicate by tapping rhythms on their chests, sticks, rocks, or whatever is available. Thus, to be coordinated, they must at least partially reveal their position. They also must be led. If the Chukka and the shaman in the group are killed, the Uyumark tend to fight among themselves. So, you see, my decision to use Jen to help me try to assassinate the shaman was not all folly. They also hoard and value shiny objects. I escaped an Uyumark attack once by throwing bronze pieces on the ground behind me as I ran. Unfortunately, I don't believe anyone has any such treasures, unless you can conjure some up, Ha-Ulrich. Lastly, if you can kill the hunters, they will be blind in most respects and easy to evade, as they exclusively rely on the hunters to track their quarry. We have little chance of pulling that off, unfortunately. They are likely patrolling Eldaluri Mora's borders in numbers.
There doesn't seem much there to take advantage of, Shirtan interjected darkly.
You are correct, Maywin agreed. The speed and endurance of the horses are our only advantage, which is why I would prefer to keep them as long as we can.
I will try to turn some of the dirt into gold, Shirtan offered, if it will help.
It might, but it need not be gold. The Uyamark have no need of money, and appraise the worth of an object by its lustre only. Now, if you will excuse me, I need to search for some herbs while I have the luxury of doing so.
But it's pouring,
Shatan blurted out in disbelief. The rain concerns me not, Maywin said, and left.
Maywin's dire description of their chances set the Shalane's heart to beating, and she sipped her grog to help calm herself. The half-elf returned as night fell, soaked to the bone, but not showing the least bit of inconvenience. The rain tapered off as full dark approached, the sound of dripping amplified as the roar of the downpour dissipated. Dinner consisted of tough strips of meat and bread that were alternately stale and soggy where the rain had soaked into saddlebags.
"We have about 2 more weeks of meals like this one," Maywin announced to the group. "After that, we need to find game, roots, and what berries might be left. Do not eat anything unfamiliar without asking me first. Tighten your belts and eat as sparingly as you can bear."
The Shalane had little appetite to start with and pocketed most of what her mother handed her. Maywin's potion worked well for the pain, though the Shalane had difficulty accustoming herself to a sling and splint. In the hours leading up to the meal, Shatan managed to transmute the dirt around the doorway into 4 shiny discs the colour of silver for use against the Uyamark. He was enormously pleased with his success, though the task drained his strength and he fell asleep directly after dinner. The Shalane shook her head at his thunderous snoring. How could Shatan possibly face down Mikik? His abilities seemed only good for cheap parlor tricks or to create and destroy trinkets. She fervently hoped his skill and strength would improve vastly before she had to rely on his protection from anything. Aethon, staggering into a wall, eyes wide and face in shock, silenced the room. He fended off attempts to see to his welfare, requiring several moments to steady himself, breath labored and hand clenched about his robes. Shatan snorted awake at the commotion.
"What is it?" Maywin importuned, face concerned.
"It is the former pontiff," the besieged Padre finally divulged. "He is dead. It is a great loss for us all." "Is your ward still intact?" Shatan asked urgently.
"Yes."
"Do you think Jen killed him?"
Shatan pressed.
"No," Aethon said. "No, his time was come."
Shatan was disappointed. The Shalane felt a brief surge of hope, and her mother's face betrayed the same emotion. Even if the ward were up, with the pontiff dead, Jen might find some other way to get out of the building.
"Now leave me," Aethon said, voice slightly strangled. "I need time to mourn and to think."
"Everyone sleep," Maywin ordered. "We leave before sunup tomorrow."
Aethon lay awake for hours, reeling under the dying pontiff's news. Mikik was indeed clever. Jen had poisoned the Shalane and her entire nation against the Ha'ulric without doing one thing anyone could fault him for. Their trip across the Shroud Lake Shard demonstrated beyond doubt that the web of prophecy was slight and fragile, ripe for destruction. Jen's near-devastating blow the night of the marriage confirmed the blindness of their eyes and the futility of their efforts to protect the holy couple. The time for tough measures had come. While Aethon wondered how deep Jen's complicity in Mikik's plan went, the answer was little more than a curiosity. While Shatan had promised he would not harm Jen, Aethon had not. Scholars might debate ends and means, but with the world in jeopardy, such concerns faded into the realm of the pedantic and irrelevant. Padre Aethon did not fear the secular or spiritual consequences of the tough decisions he had made and would make to ensure the birth of the holy child. Jen had already ruined the unity of the 2 most powerful nations on Kihol, and if he should perchance escape the ward before death, he would no doubt spend every waking moment seeking Shatan's life. The greatest damage Aethon knew was the plain disgust the Shalane felt for Shatan. The relationship so crucial to the final scenes of the prophecy had degraded to complete animosity by both parties, and Aethon saw no clear way to repair it. The way the Shalane and the Ha'ulric insulted and ignored each other frightened him beyond words. If he could reconcile the two, and he would try it against all odds, then Eldaloth could not help but reward a patient, stalwart servant. The Padre rolled off of his bedroll and stood. Maywin, standing at the front door, glanced over her shoulder at the movement and then wandered out into the night. Aethon shook his head.
Jen's allies ruled their party and would hold the balance of power until they could portal off the shard. Luckily, Aethon knew the art of tacit instruction as well as anyone. Standing, he crossed to where Shatan slept.
"Your Grace,"
Aethon whispered as he shook Shatan gently, trying not to disturb anyone else. He glanced back to the door, hoping Maewyn would not reappear. Dacen or Cadean was likely awake somewhere, but that could not be helped. The rest of the dark room was alive with a sound of muted and deep breathing, though the Padre couldn't ascertain if everyone was asleep. After the former pontiff's devastating final message, Padre Aethon knew he had to inform Shatan of what he knew without anyone else's knowledge or suspicion. Shatan's eyes slowly opened and widened, the whites barely visible in the weak light. Padre Aethon leaned close.
"Holiness," Aethon whispered, "follow me out the back. Be quiet. Wake no one."
Shatan wrestled his blanket off himself and stood more noisily than Aethon wanted, but once they passed outside, damp grass soft beneath their bare feet, they listened for any sign that anyone had awakened. Once Padre Aethon was reasonably assured of their secrecy, he whispered into Shatan's ear.
"Before the pontiff died, he sent a message for me to relay to you and to all Kihol. You must keep this to yourself until you are within safe places and surrounded by people that you trust. He did not indicate how he knew, but he revealed to me that Jen is the Ilk."
Shatan's face transformed from misunderstanding to shock, to near glee.
"We must let everyone know immediately," he whispered excitedly. "This will finally put an end to his interference. Furthermore, we should send someone back to kill him outright. At last I have him."
"No, Your Grace," Padre Aethon pleaded. "You must not say a word of this to anyone. If you so much as suggest the idea in that room, you will have a sword at your throat before you can let the last word fall."
"But surely they should know," Shatan argued. "For their own protection, if nothing else."
"Do you think they'll believe you?" Padre Aethon returned heatedly. "I'm not sure I believe it. It does explain why he tried to kill you, and perhaps why he was so sickly in Elder Lurimora. But beyond that, the notion that Jen is the Ilk is preposterous. Only the pontiff's declaration that it is so makes me trust that it is."
"Why should you doubt?" Shatan countered. "He fought my will at every turn. He set people against me who should follow and obey me. I would say he's done Ilk's work."
"Your reasoning is sound, Your Grace. But for everyone else, there will be a lot of pieces that will not fit. Mikkik's greatest fear is that you and the Shalane should have a child. Jen could have destroyed the prophecy at his convenience at any time in the last year. You and the Shalane were both within easy reach of his sword. Instead, he has risked his life for her, and I, for one, am not ready to say or could prove that any of his deeds were faked or disingenuous."
"Yes, but hear reason, Shatan,"
Padre Aethon's voice intensified. "You hate Jen. Every Rugothian noble and aristocrat knows it. If you go in there and start spouting accusations, they will only see it as further evidence of your jealous disdain and turn against you. They honour Jen and revere his actions and his bravery. Anything you say, especially without obvious demonstrable proof, will be seen as spiteful slander."
"You are the proof. The late pontiff is the proof."
"No,"
Padre Aethon disagreed, voice calming.
I have not been as kind or respectful to Jen as the Rugothians think I should be. For my own reasons. They think I dislike him, and if I stand with you in this claim, I hope you can see what would come of it."
Shatan's face twisted into a dissatisfied snarl, and he hit the nearby wall with the meaty part of his fist.
"Why did you even bother telling me if I could do nothing with the information?"
"Because we must prepare some measures for your protection and the Shalane's. Ilk or no, Jen will see you dead if he can. You must leave Jen for me to deal with and ask no questions. Do not talk of him, even to people you trust, or get lured into any conversations about him by those loyal to him. Avoid any private conversations with Mirelle at all costs. She is dangerous."
"Anything else?"
"Yes. While we travel tomorrow, I want you to talk to the Shalane about how you were brought up, the people who taught you, the restrictions placed upon you, the things you enjoyed and those you didn't."
As Aethon expected, Shatan frowned.
"Why? I don't think there is a woman alive that hates me as much as she does."
"That is why. Just do it, and do not respond in kind if she baits or insults you. It is time for control."
Shatan grunted, clearly dissatisfied, and Aethon's stomach clenched with renewed worry. The Howlric did accept, however, even if grudgingly. Now get some sleep, Ethan ordered. I have other matters to take care of.
Chatan stumbled off to bed and fell asleep more quickly than Ethan liked. He thought the man would be sufficiently worried about their circumstances that it would disturb him enough to fend off sleep for at least an hour. As silently as he could, Ethan woke a slumbering Ogmerian soldier. As with Chatan, he led him out the back of the building.
"What is your name?" Ethan asked him quietly.
"Wenderman, Your Grace."
"Wenderman, I need to lay a task to you. This is for you alone, and you should speak of it to no one else. Can you do this?"
"Yes, Padre."
"Good. Listen carefully. I am afraid that in our haste this morning, we may have left something behind that could be potentially dangerous to our mission. I would like you to return to Eldaluri Mora and scout the area. If you find a potential threat still alive, you will need to destroy it immediately. Do you understand?"
"Yes, I would do so gladly, but..."
Ethan understood his worry.
"If there is anything behind us, it will be weak and little able to defend itself. You shouldn't have much trouble, especially if you keep your distance and use a bow. If anything's there, of course. I will establish a connection with your mind. Should you need to inspect the Hall of Three Moons, you need but think the wish, and I will drop the ward so you may enter. Once finished, return immediately. Do not report to me. I will know how you fared through the link to your mind. If anyone asks, I ordered you to scout about. Lord Cairn truthfully knows nothing of this, and you will aver to such if asked."
"I understand."
"Now I will establish the link."
Ethan palmed the soldier's head, incanting softly for a brief moment.
"Now go. Stay out of sight, especially from Maywin."
Wenderman left, slowly picking his way through the wet forest to the rear of the building. Ethan bit his lip, hoping against hope the half-elf had occupied herself elsewhere. Wenderman was no match for her skills. Re-entering the building, Ethan noticed Dayson sitting wide awake by the sleeping Shalane, eyes toward the front of the building, where, Ethan noted thankfully, Maywin stood staring into the night. The Padre reclined on his uncomfortable bed and, unlike the slumbering Chatan, remained awake through the night, listening to the thunder roll overhead.